I'd like to read to you this morning from the book of Ecclesiastes. We've been doing some lessons here in Ecclesiastes. And so this morning we're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 8. And I would like to just begin by reading that passage, and then we will come back and talk about it. He's going to be talking here about wisdom and the value of wisdom, and also the fact that in life, even though we have wisdom, there still is a lot of things in life that we cannot really get to the bottom and answer questions that are really frustrating and that perhaps we'll never know the answer to some of these questions. And yet, it is valuable to have wisdom and to find the wisdom that we can obtain through God's Word and through our faith in God. So let's begin by reading in Ecclesiastes 8. Who is like a wise man? And who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness of his face is changed. I say, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. Where the word of a king is, there is power. And who may say to him, what are you doing? He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment, because for every matter there is a time and judgment. Though the misery of man increases greatly, for he does not know what will happen, so who can tell him when it will occur? No one has power over the spirit or over the wind to retain the wind, and no one has power in the day of death. There is no release from that war, and wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. All this I have seen and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another to his own hurt. Then I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. This also is vanity. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Though a sinner does evil 100 times, and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear God, fear before God. There is a vanity which on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. So I commended enjoyment, because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat and drink, to drink and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor all the day life which God gives him under the sun. When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. We see here that the message of Ecclesiastes, to make it very basic and simple, is that his main focus is on the vanity of earthly material things. As he said in chapter 1, in the very opening, said, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity." And so he's looking at life under the sun. He's looking at life here as we live it here on earth, but from a human perspective, just here on the earth, no mention, no thinking of God, just here on an earthly plane, that life is meaningless. It is empty in so many ways. And he breaks that all down. But we need to keep in mind that his main point, the reason that he is writing the book, is to show the importance of serving God throughout life. And he comes to that conclusion at the end of the letter, because in chapter 12 and verse 13, he says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all." I believe that Ecclesiastes is a message that is needed in our society today, because many people are finding this same frustration in life that Solomon is speaking about, and for the same reason that they are looking for it here on earth, and they are failing to see that the answers to life and the real joy and meaning of life is found not here on earth, but in a relationship with God, who created this earth and who is the reason why we are here. So we're going to be looking here in chapter 8 at the value of wisdom, the qualities of a wise man, a wise person in life, and how needed wisdom is, how rare it is to find a person with true wisdom. So he said, "Who is like a wise man? And who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness of his face is changed." So he is pointing out here in the very beginning with these rhetorical questions that it is very hard to find a wise person, and that a wise man stands out from the great majority of people. Whenever you find a wise person who truly has wisdom, they are very special. They have qualities that no one else around them has. And so he says that a wise person knows the interpretation of a thing. And this means that a wise person is able to understand life in a way that others fail to be able to understand, and to be able to explain the foundational purposes and causes and meaning of things in life. So it's very valuable for them to have a person, when there are many questions that are being raised up of what is happening or what is the meaning, to have a wise person who has foundational understanding of life. And this is the understanding of life that we, as God-fearing people who believe in the Word and the Bible, we are able to have this wisdom of life that God gives us. An understanding of why we are here. Where did we come from? Who is the Creator? Is there a purpose for life? And that the fact that God loves us, and that He has given His Son to die for us, and that there is a place that is being prepared for us to live in eternity after this life is over. Often, many times, a person with wisdom will also be able to look at things happening in life and be able to give wise counsel and direction and meaning and understanding to the things that are happening on them. But he also points out the fact that the wise person, it causes his face to shine. So there is something about a wise person that even in their the facial expression of them, that they reflect the fact that they are different, that they have an inward joy about them. They have a graciousness about them, a compassion about them that many other people do not have. And of course, this comes from that wisdom that is integrated into our lives as we know God, as we fear God. We're able to begin to have this wisdom of life. In fact, the book of Proverbs, it tells us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So it is that quality about a wise person that they have integrated God into their life, and that is within their heart, and it is within their inner being, and therefore it actually exudes itself even on the expression of their face. There's a calm, there's a radiance, there's a glow that you see in the face of a wise person, because that person has an understanding of life that is positive, that is optimistic, that is hopeful, and that is directly tied to the fact that he knows the Lord, and therefore he has wisdom. So it's a beautiful thing that they have. Now, I also, in this chapter, though, does point out the limitations of wisdom, that even the wise person does not know all the answers. And there are things in life that we just don't know the answer to. We just don't understand all the answers to life that we might raise and that we might wonder about. So it's limited. God is the one, of course, who knows all things and has all wisdom. But wise people do exist in this world, and he is pointing that out for us to be able to see and understand that there are wise people, and they're very rare, but they're very valuable. So in verse 2, he begins to talk about the king, and he talks about the fact that wisdom is needed when we go before the king. Now, of course, we do not have a king here in our country, but in those days, in the days of Solomon, there was a king, and the irony is Solomon himself was the king. And it might seem that some of his comments are self-serving here a little bit as he talks about this, but I believe that actually Solomon is looking at this at the end of his life and looking back, and he is wanting to share wisdom that is beneficial for everyone in life. So he said, "Keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. Where the word of a king is, there is power, and who may say to him, 'What are you doing?'" Well, his point is that we need to have submission to the king. That is the proper attitude and the proper bearing that we should take when it comes to being a part of a political kingdom or a citizen of a nation, as we are, that we have all taken the oath of citizenship. Right? I mean, we are all citizens of the United States, and so therefore we should keep the law for the oath of God that we have taken. We've taken an oath before God to be a citizen of that country. And therefore, we need to have an attitude of submission. Now, we might not particularly be in agreement with the president that is in office at that particular time. But the fact remains that we should have a basic attitude of wisdom, of submission to authority, that it therefore a purpose, and that we have taken an oath, and we are loyal citizens, we are good citizens, and we want to demonstrate that through our attitudes. So he said, be hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand for an evil thing. We should not be rude And whenever you go before civil authorities, we should always show that respect. And so he is talking about, if you were to be invited to come before the king, do not just get up and walk out. That you should wait until you're excused or dismissed. That would be a proper respect that you were showing to the fact that the king was willing to see you. He was willing to have you to come in before his presence. So we understand that we need to have a proper respect for authorities. This does not mean that we as Christians would never, under any circumstances, take a strong disagreement with policies that are being advocated from our government. We know for a fact that in the book of Acts, the apostles took the stand. They said, we must obey God rather than men. When it came down to the fact that they were being asked to deny or stop preaching that Jesus was the Christ and things like that, that would be to go directly against the will of God, and therefore they refused. And they were ready to suffer the consequences. Some of them were thrown in prison as a result of that. But the point that Solomon is making is that if you submit to the order of the king, you will not get in trouble. You know, and the Bible teaches this in the book of Romans, whenever it comes to civil authority, that the basic principle is that we are to be in submission. And yet, we understand that not only does God hold us to be in submission to the proper authority, God also holds the proper authority in submission to His will, and that therefore there's an accountability there also. And I'm always reminded of the fact that as Jesus was speaking before Pontius Pilate in John chapter 19, he was being sort of prodded by Pilate, and he said, aren't going to say anything. And Jesus spoke to him and he said, well, if it weren't for God having put you and given you the authority to be in the position that you were in, you would not be where you are right now. And that is true, that our officers and our leaders and our president and our congressmen of our country need to be reminded of the fact that we are loyal citizens and we are here to do our duty as citizens, but you also are in a position of authority and you have taken the oath before God to uphold the Constitution and to do everything that would protect the citizens of both enemy harm of domestic and foreign that might come to harm us. And so God is going to be holding that person responsible also. But his point here is that we should show proper respect and a loyalty, and that when we obey, we will not get in trouble because the king has power. He is able to enforce the law by force, and therefore he has the ability to arrest citizens, to put them in prison, and things like that, if he considers them to be dismissive, or if they get disrespectful or disobedient or lawbreakers or a danger in some way, that he does have the power, the force to arrest and put them under the prison that they might have at the time. So the wise course, he said, is to be submissive and to show that respectfulness when we address. And I think that is good advice for us, and we need to remember that whenever we do have a grievance, we might say, or something that we wish to bring before the authorities that we have, we still need to be respectful. And recently there has been cases that we've been hearing about in the news where parents have been very concerned about the teaching of critical race theory in the schools. Even in the elementary schools and younger are hearing and finding that their children are being taught a racist view of life, that the oppressors and the oppressed and so forth, and it is dividing up people in, according to race. And they're very upset and they're going before the school boards, and some of them are standing up in the meeting and yelling out and saying, we do not want this. This is too much. Well, the thing that we would say to them is that even though there is a grievance And I certainly would support and agree with that sentiment that they are concerned about. Yet there's a proper way to address the authority. And that is the point that is being made here by Solomon for us in the book of Ecclesiastes. Now he says there's a proper timing for things, and that a wise person understands this, and there's a proper procedure to follow whenever there is something that is upsetting. There still is a proper time for it, there's a proper procedure, a way to go about it in the proper way. And he said, and a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment, because for every matter there is a time and judgment, though the misery of man increases greatly. So in other words, even if things are really bad, there still is a proper way to do it. There's a proper way to say it. There's a proper way to respond to those grievances that they would be more likely to be heard and listened to. Whereas if a person just disregards all propriety and all respect and they go in and they've been banging on the table and yelling and so forth, it will certainly get their attention, but it might not be as effective as a person who really has wisdom and has prepared the way to address the audience. And he goes in and he sits there calmly, and he goes through and he addresses that this is the reason that we are concerned about this issue. He is more likely to have further weight to an effect of what he is saying. He might even have a positive direction to offer. Say, now this is a solution that I would recommend. And he lays out for them how this is going to lead to harm, and it is a much better way that it can be addressed. And that would be true wisdom. Well, Solomon goes on to point out the fact that wisdom oftentimes, though, is to understand something very simple and something very basic, and that is that there are things in life that are simply beyond our control. There are things that we cannot do anything about. Even though we have wisdom, we still cannot solve all things. And there are things that are just beyond our control. And so he says in verse 7, for he does not know what will happen. So who can tell him when it will occur? In other words, we do not know the future. None of us knows the future. So we cannot go down to Olympia and tell the governor or the people there, now if you do this, this is what's going to happen, as if we know what the future is. We do not know the future. He does not know the future. The only one who knows the future is God. But if we are not praying to God and we're not submitting ourselves to God, then it becomes of an arrogant attitude that we have, that we perhaps claiming that we know what the outcome is going to be when we do not. So he says, he does not know what will happen. So who can tell him when it will occur? No one has power over the spirit to retain the spirit. And I believe that the word here should be the wind, that he is the word, Hebrew word, the spirit, and the wind and the breath is the same thing. So it's possible it could be talking about the spirit, that we cannot retain the spirit when it comes time to die. He talks about this also here. But I believe that actually he is giving four different examples of things that we cannot control as human beings, of our limits that we have. We're not in control of these things. And we need to recognize that. So he says, no one has power over the wind to retain the wind. We cannot know the future. And there are four things in life that we can't control. One of them is the wind, the climate, the weather. You know, we cannot control that. And then second, the day of death. So none of us has any control over the day of death. We do not know when the day of death will be for each one of us. We have no control over that. We can take care of our health, and we can try to be careful when we drive on the freeways and many things like that. But still, we do not control the day of death. God is in control of these things. The discharge in the time of war. Now, in the time of war, there would be a conscription to military service. And we have some countries today, like Sweden, I think, or Switzerland might be an example of that, that if it ever came down, I think Israel is an example of that, that if it came down to a time of war, and Israel is in a time of war almost all the time, but there is a 100% conscription into the military in those countries, and you do not get a discharge from that. Our country is at war. We need every man available to defend the country. And so you cannot walk away from that. You cannot get an excuse from that in a time of war. You know, in our war, there is, in the history of our country, deserter, there is only one example in the history of our country of a U.S. soldier being executed for abandoning duty, and that was Private Slovak. And I think it was in World War II, but he was a young man, and he was married, and he had children, and he was brought into the military, and he saw the heat of the battle and how terrible it was going to be, and he said, I want out, and he fled. He ran from the battlefield. Well, he was arrested, and eventually he was executed because his example that he was setting was not good. But there, you cannot have a discharge in time of war, and the wicked deeds, he says, there is no release from that, and the wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. In other words, wicked people who are given to wickedness, they cannot, the wicked deeds that they do cannot get them out at the end. They're going to be accountable to God. And they cannot escape from the day of death that is coming for them. So there are things in life, he says, that we cannot control. And that even though there is a wise person, one thing that they would understand is, look, we do not have control over these things. These things are in the hand of God. And he is the one that we must look to solve these problems that we are having. So he said in verse 9, all this I have seen and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another to his own hurt. And he's saying this is an evil thing that he has observed in life. We know that Solomon was making a very thorough study of life. He wanted to get down to the root causes. He wanted to be able to write about it and tell people about it, why things are the way they are and why there are frustrating things in life. But he said, I applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun, and there is a time in which one man rules over another to his hurt. He's talking about the fact that when people get in power, the evil nature of people's own hearts, there is a time when they use that power to oppress and hurt other people. They do not use it for the good. They use it for the evil, for the power that they can accrue to themselves and hold on to. And he said, "This is a terrible thing that he has observed in life." And it goes back to the fact of what he was saying earlier in the ending of chapter 7 that we noted last week, and that is God made man upright, but men have sought out many devices. So there is a fallen nature of man, and the sinfulness of man, the evil of man is on display, and we see that happening when there are people who want to seize power so that they can use it in a selfish way, and they can put the affliction on those underneath them and put the boot down on them, and whether you like it or not, that's what we dictate. So we see that happening in the world today. And we see it sometimes even happening today in our own government. We have been blessed to live in America, a free country. And yet we still have to recognize the fact that our elected officials are men. And as men, they are flawed. And as men, they have this weakness and this desire for power that can easily corrupt them. And given the fact that they are able to be in the majority and they can have the president, they can have the both houses of Congress, they can have judges that will uphold what they are doing, there's a possibility that we could have an abuse of power in our own government like what he is describing here. And it would be a terrible thing for the people under that system. So, unfortunately, that is a fact of life. That is something that we see happening in the world. So he said in verse 10, "Then I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done." Now, he is talking about a person here who was wicked, and yet they had come and gone to the place of holiness. In other words, there was the temple in Jerusalem where people would go to worship God. And this person that he is describing here, that he has seen this person being buried, and he knew that it was a wicked man. This was a wicked person. There's no two ways about it. And yet this same man went in and out from the temple of holiness, and he pretended to be this godly person. He wanted to create that impression. Now, we see that sometimes that there can be politicians, there can be other individuals, that because they can see that it would be an advancement to their own reputation and their career in this life, that they make it a point to always go to church every Sunday. And yet, in their life, they are a scoundrel. And people know them for that in their business dealings and any other thing, they may even be an organized crime. And yet every Sunday they go to church. Now he said, "I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done." This is also vanity. This is one of those things in life that isn't right. It isn't fair. God, why aren't you doing something about that? And yet we do not have the answer to that. We understand God is in control. God is wise. He knows what he is doing. He is in control of the affairs of this earth. And yet here we see a man who was such a hypocrite. He went in and out of the worship every Sunday and pretended to be this upstanding citizen. And yet we all know that it is a lie. And yet he goes to his funeral. And what do people do? They say, "Oh, this was a wonderful man. He did so many things for the community. We will miss him," and so forth. And yet, a few weeks later, he's totally forgotten about. And Solomon is saying, it just doesn't seem right when you see things like that happening in the world and in life. Why is that? Well, we don't know the answer to that. God is the only one that knows the answer to it. He says in verse 11, he says, "Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil." Now, there's an old saying that is often repeated, that the wheels of justice grind slowly. And we see that the legal system, the justice system, it is on slow motion. It takes forever to get things through the courts, to get things to happen. And because of that, he says, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Now, the law is designed that when you break the law, there's going to be a penalty. There's going to be a consequence to show. But if it is taking forever and you see people who are doing all sorts of things to break the law and yet nothing is happening to them. You know, we have had a problem here in our neighborhood for quite a while that people world are going through the mailboxes at night and they are stealing people's mail, and they are sometimes parking here in the parking lot apparently after midnight and going through the mail and people's bank accounts and whatever they can find. And then if it's nothing of value, they toss it in the bushes. Well, this is a federal crime, to be stealing mail, right? But nothing is happening to these people. So what happens as the result of it? More and more of that type of thing is going to happen. We've had the movement in our society in the last couple of years, defund the police. Defund the police. There is this narrative that has been put forth that the police are actively trying to kill black men, that they have it in for black men. You know, we know this is a lie if we study the statistics. And yet, the defund the police is a very dangerous movement, because if it is followed, there are going to be not enough police to enforce the law and protect the citizens. And we already see that happening with the murder rates are going through the ceiling in many of these cities where this is happening. So his point is that the justice, when it is enforced, and when it is enforced speedily, when there is a consequence for breaking the law, then people are going to sit up and take notice, and they're going to be restrained from breaking the law. In other words, you can drive down through the streets here, and you will see that there are school zones that it says you need to not drive over 25 miles an hour. Or 20 miles an hour when it is in school, when the kids are in school. Do not drive over that limit. And yet, sometimes people think, well, no one is really paying attention to this. But then when they put up a camera there, and then you get in the notice in the mail that, hey, you have a $200 fine because you were caught on the camera going at 30 miles an hour through that 20 mile an hour school zone. Guess what? You start paying attention. So the slowness of justice, when the law is not enforced, people are going to take advantage of it. Verse 13, he says, though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him, who fear him openly. But it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are a shadow, because he does not fear before God. He says, you may find a sinner who goes out and commits the same crime over and over again, even 100 times. And he gets away with it. He never does get caught. But, he says, I know in my heart that it will not be well with those who fear. It will be well with those who fear God, and with those who do not fear God, it's not going to be well with them, because there is going to be a retribution even after this life is over that they are not going to be able to escape and avoid. So, many times he was saying in the book of Ecclesiastes, I saw this, I saw that. But this time he is talking about a conviction, a faith that he has. He says, yeah, you can find those cases. There are people out there that are committing all these crimes. They're getting away with it. They seem to be getting away with it. Nothing's happening to them. And yet, I'll tell you this, he says, it's going to be well with those who openly fear God, and with those who do not, it's not going to be well with those people. So this was a conviction. Justice is coming. Justice is coming. So in verse 14, he said, there is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said this also is vanity. Here's the example where it's just not fair. We look at this in life and we think now there is a retribution, there is a reward. But somehow the labels are getting switched. The people that should be getting the retribution, they're getting the reward. They are doing all of these things that they are not faithfully serving God, and even they are doing things that we know to be wrong, and yet they seem to be being rewarded in this life. They live for a long life. They live in a nice home. They are prosperous. They seem to be successful in all of these things. And here is a person who is a godly person. And we can cite examples of this where we have seen it happen. That there's a young person, a young mother perhaps, who has several children that she's trying to be raised. And she, of all people, comes down with cancer or COVID and she dies. Why is that? We would look at the you know, the providence, the governing of God, and we would wonder, why is this turning out the way that it is? It seems so unfair. And yet he's saying we have no control of that. We can't question God. That's not our place to question God. God is the one who's in control of those things. We need to fear God and trust Him. So he said, so I commended enjoyment because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life, which God gives him under the sun. Now, he is recommending here a view of life that we are able to enjoy life as God gives it to us, as the gift of God. And he's not saying here to be in excess. He's not saying, like, you know, there was a, I think it was a beer commercial years ago that was saying this, that you just need to grab all the gusto, you know, eat, drink, and be merry. because you only go around once. Things like that. And there's the advocation, well, we might as well just go down and party all the time and excess. And that is not what Solomon is saying. He's simply saying to in moderation enjoy your life as God gives it to us. Because, in other words, don't beat your head against the wall trying to solve all the vexing issues of life and question, second-guessing God, why is he allowing this to happen? Just recognize the fact that God is giving you your life and enjoy it. So don't let this bother you that you stay up all night and you can't sleep and you can't get any rest because in your mind, why is this happening? Why are these people getting away with this stuff? As far as we are concerned, he's saying we need to be able to just see that life is good. God is good. God is blessing us. God is in control of these things. He's already pointed out the fact that there is going to be a day of judgment. We know this. God is going to judge the righteous and the wicked in his time. And he has mercy and he has grace and he has compassion. And so God is long-suffering. And eventually, though, he is going to hold people accountable and they are going to come before God and give an account of their lives. So we know that is true. So why do we sit here and second question God and say, God, why do you allow this to happen? This mother died of COVID and she needed to be here with her children, her little children. There's no one there now to take care of them. And it's so unfair. And here's this person who is into all of this crime and everything. He doesn't have a single problem in the world. Don't beat your head against the wall trying to figure that out, Solomon is saying. Because that's one of those things that human limitation, our wisdom is never going to know the answer to those things. So what good does it do to worry about it? So finally in verse 16 and 17, he said, when I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. So it closes on that point here that he began in the beginning of the chapter. He's saying, who is a wise man? Who is like a wise man? He's very rare. You don't find very many. They're few and far between. People that have true wisdom. Such a beautiful thing. And yet even that wise person who is calm and his face is shining and he enjoys life, even that person will be the first to admit, I do not have all the answers. I do not know all of the reasons that in the wisdom of God, in the management of God, I trust that God knows what he's doing. God is in control, and I'm going to leave it there with him. I'm going to take life and enjoy it as God gives me each day. And I'm going to bless him, and I'm going to fear him and serve him. And this is what Jesus teaches us. This is what Jesus teaches us in Matthew chapter 6, in verse 25 through 34. He says, do not worry about tomorrow, what you will eat or what you will drink, because God is going to be giving us those things that we need. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to it. But as far as us knowing all the answers of the providence of God, we don't. So don't try to go down to the governor and say, look, I'm a Christian. I study my Bible. I can tell you what's going to happen 6 years from now or 6 months from now. Here's what God has revealed to me. God hasn't revealed it to us. We don't know the future, what is coming. And there's been Christian leaders within the last year have gotten egg all over their face because they tried to make predictions like this. Oh, we know who's going to win the election. We know what's coming. And yet it didn't turn out that way. what do you say now? The fact is, we do not have the ability to look into the future and know what is going to happen. We have to trust God. God is in control of these things. And yes, there may be things that seem unjust to us, and we would maybe want to do it a different way, and why did that happen? But the fact is, God is the one who knows the answer to that. And God is the one who sees the fact that we are all sinners and that we needed a Savior. And so He sent His Son to this earth to die a cruel death on the cross that we might have salvation through Him. We do not save ourselves through our own wisdom. Even the best and the wisest of men, that's not how we're going to be saved. In our life, it's going to come through we submit to Jesus Christ as Lord and recognize the fact that man has sinned and fallen short, and it is God who loved us and gave His Son to die for us, and that is where our hope must come from. So Solomon, I think, is preparing us for that message through the book of Ecclesiastes to show our own shortcomings, our own limitations, that we need a Savior. And certainly that is why we're having a lot of the problems we're having in our world today, is because people are not accepting this and coming to the foot of the cross where we need to be. Thank you for your attention this morning, and we're going to stand and sing the invitation song that's been selected. And if you're subject in any way to Jesus Christ this morning, to come to Him, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.